produced in the area. Everything is locally grown right here in Missouri. Why deal with all the problems of the big box stores when the Franklin Group has similar inventory at half the price of their competitors? Now, I'm not going to mention names, but if a local independent businessman gave you the better product for less money, isn't that where you want to spend your hard-earned cash? Remember, for flowers, shrubs, or plants, it's the Franklin Group on Manchester Road right between Brentwood and McKnight. Open at 8 a.m. 7 days a week, or you can call 314-422-7056. That's 314-422-7056, and ask for the owner, Jack Cusimano, and be sure to tell him that 590 The Fan sent you.
We all have a lot of things we're going to do one day. One day I'll change my career. One day I'll get my bachelor's degree. Well, today is the day to be brave. Because Maryville University offers more than 30 degrees online, including bachelor's degrees, with no entrance exams and no application fees. We've been empowering students for nearly 150 years, so we know there's no time like the present to focus on your future. Learn more now at online.maryville.edu.
This is Doug Vaughn here to tell you to get a jump on the spring home selling season. With low inventories and less competition, homes are fetching higher prices. To leverage a higher price home, call Mark and Neil Gelman of Coldwell Banker Premier with their STL Rocket Listing. Mark and Neil can give you a cash offer. Use their proven accelerated demand program that turns up the marketing and gets you the most money for your home. Either way, your home is sold. Call the Gelmans today at 314-336-1991. Online at 590homes.com and start packing.
Certain restrictions apply.
Joe Rusevans with FRA Trust here, and as a leading financial professional for almost 40 years, I want to help you take control of your financial future in this post-pandemic economy. If you have over $250,000 in a retirement account, or perhaps you've recently been furloughed and don't know what to do, my team at FRA Trust would love to help you learn how to turn a 401k retirement account into your own personal IRA. Don't delay. Call us today at 855-935-4214. That's 855-935-4214.
This is Mariah, third generation at Newsetters Fine Jewelry. Buying an engagement ring can be intimidating. At Newsetters, we ensure complete understanding of your purchase. We offer a choice in both lab and mine-grown diamonds and are able to work with any budget. Let our family help educate you on your choice at Big Ben and Doherty Ferry or at wowdiamonds.com.
Hi, I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. The housing market is really heating up and it's about to take off. Folks have been sitting on the sideline waiting for that right time to go out and look for the home of their dreams, and that time is now. We are currently pre-approving record numbers of buyers, and they're all waiting for that perfect house to hit the market. If you're even considering buying a new home, you need to get pre-approved today. TheHomeLoanExpert.com.
The Home Loan Expert LLC, NMLS number 1326241.
Recent events have shown that life can turn instantly, causing many people to realize that estate planning is essential. The Inskip Law Firm is here to help. From trusts and wills to powers of attorney, deeds, and probate, they will handle your needs without needing an in-person consultation. They use flat fees so you know what you're paying and make the whole process easy. Call now at 314-818-0344. Just a quick chat and you decide together what services are right for your situation.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision. It should not be based solely upon advertisements.
Looking for the most unique grocery store in St. Louis? That's easy. Star Specialty Grocer, located on Big Bend, one block north of Highway 40. This Richmond Heights treasure has been a part of the St. Louis community since 1979. Stars offers a wine selection second to none, with selections across price points, a unique selection of liquor, varieties of cheeses from around the world, fresh wild seafood flown in daily, and prime beef raised by local farmers. The employees pride themselves on product knowledge and customer service. They're open if you want to stop by or call them to place an order at 314-781-2345. That's 314-781-2345. You can browse beforehand, check out the staff's picks, and then put in your order online at starrs1.com. Remember, for the best in beef, seafood, liquor, and wine, visit Star's Specialty Grocer on Big Bend. And be sure to tell them 590 sent you.
The Favazzas family want to send out a big thank you to all their loyal customers who helped support their efforts to provide meals to frontline workers around the St. Louis area. Their dining room and patio are open now, and the Favazzas menu you know and love will still be available through carryout and curbside pickup. Tony, John, and Mark are putting the safety of their guests and employees first, following all protocols and guidelines. Check out Favazzas.com for the full menu and ordering info, or they'll see you on the Hill.
Three Bay Barbecue and Bakery is located inside the West County Phillips 66 Station at Clayton Road and 141. They're offering carryout, delivery, and curbside pickup. Three Bay Barbecue and Bakery is open Tuesday through Friday from 10:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. So you can call ahead to place your order, fill up your car with gas, and drive home with a great meal of barbecue and your pick of their fresh homemade desserts, including gooey butter cake and so much more. Here's the number, 636-227-1208. That's 636-227-1208.
Pyro Signs is a locally owned business providing St. Louis with all their signage needs for over 60 years. A proud IBEW union company, the Pyro Signs team is always building on their foundation of learning in the sign industry, which means they can handle all your needs, whether it's channel letters, monuments, neon, pylons, or vinyl. They have experience with signage across professional sports venues and even an STL landmark. Get your signage right with the top pros of the area. Pyro Signs, 636-464-0200 and pyrosigns.com.
I'm sorry. My mistake.
Oh. Yeah,
no, I got to do one bit of business.
Oh, crap. Okay, hang on a second.
Edit that, because I don't like I always tell you, maybe somebody's listening who might want to hire us, and if they hear that, they're going to go, well, they're not professional.
Right.
So if you edit that out, and then just give me any bumper music.
Okay, I got you. Here we go.
Okay, edit that out first.
Radio edit.
There you go. Wow. Seamless. We'll never know. On the way, Scott Sherman, co-host of the Yard Sale on Saturday morning, 7 to 9 o'clock, for the next hour. And congratulations to you listeners who have filled the phone lines. So you're getting smart. You know, you get in here right after the news, and you are in. Lines are full. When we start this, when Scott finishes helping somebody, that's when you jump on the phone and you dial one of these numbers, 855-282-8255 or 314-821-0590. I got a text yesterday from Marco Bertarelli. Remember when I did my Italian accent?
Mm-hmm.
His text was simple. It just said, you need to work on that Italian accent. Apparently he didn't, you know, and he's Italian. He would know it wasn't that good. But the other thing that he shared with me was, and Feast Magazine, I've heard of that.
They talk about local restaurants and stuff like that, don't they?
Well, they just had a bunch of awards they handed out in different categories, and the winner in the it's like a kitchen store category where people buy things was Bertarelli.
Cool.
Yeah. Now, the other thing I found out, because I spoke with them this morning, is they have a surplus, and this is the key word, surplus, of PPE things. That's personal protection equipment, masks, gloves, you get the idea, plexiglass stuff. They have a surplus, and I keep hearing stories about these companies where there are lots of them. In fact, I think most businesses still have the employees wearing the protective gear, and they have the protective glass panels. And but I keep hearing, we're just having trouble finding masks and gloves. No, you shouldn't be. They're right there on the Hill at Bertarelli in the warehouse. He said, we have plenty. We have more than enough. Come and get what you need. So not only for individuals who want a mask or want gloves or what? Yes, you can walk in there, and just like you can walk in and buy knives or have them sharpened, you go to Bertarelli and get that stuff. But all you businesses who don't have enough, because look, nobody knows how much longer employees are going to be required to comply with this stuff. I hope it's not, but the truth is, realistically, I think we're looking at least another couple of months of this stuff or more. You're going to run out. How are you going to replenish it? Bertarelli. That's my suggestion. The terrific family business. They're not going to hijack you and price gouge you. Like some of these companies, oh, you need gloves? Well, mark ours up about eight times what they normally cost. They can do that. They have plenty. They have a warehouse full of it. You need to know that. In addition to being the place you've known for so long is the cutlery place to buy knives, get knives sharpened, as well as lawn implements. This is your PPE headquarters, personal protection equipment. Bertarelli, they have a website. If you don't remember it, I'm about to tell you why you don't have to. It's Bertarelli Co., as in C-O company.com. 314-323-0712. They're on the hill on Marconi. And if you need to contact them and you can't remember what I just told you, go to facebook.com/AM and the PM or go to frankopinion.com. And there's a link right to their website. Bertarelli Cutlery and your PPE headquarters. There it is. There's that deal.
On this side of the law, on that side of the law.
Again, congratulations, Bertarelli, winning the Kitchen Bar Store category in Feast Magazine. All right, we have full phone lines lit up. That is exciting. I'm glad to see that. Well, because Scott Sherman's here. He's here for two reasons. He's here to help you with your legal issues and to win a trivia again with the Bill Cleveland later.
Not so much.
We'll see. So we gave you the numbers. Let's just remind everybody. Well, let's just welcome Scott Sherman, everybody.
Thank you, Frank.
Let's jump right in here. Blind Nick, who I believe we spoke to just a couple of days ago, is our first caller. Blind Nick, welcome back to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hello, Scott. How are you?
Great, Blind Nick. How are you?
I'm good. I'm AM and PM.
Thank you. May I call you Blind Nick?
No, you may not.
Okay.
Now, why did Dan type, if you don't like it, why did Dan type it like that? Did you?
That's what I told him. That's what I said.
Okay, you told him that, but you don't like
it. May I call you Mr. Blind Nick?
No, you can call me what you want to call me. Just
how about
call
Nick?
Me let's just go Nick.
Nick works.
Call him Johnson.
Nick Works. Is that your last name? Works? Nick Works. What do you got for Scott, Nick?
Actually, my last name is Silver. So my question is, actually, I got a Johnny character. He talked way too long. I've been on hold since like 3:40.
I'm sorry, would you say that again? He may still be listening. That Johnny character talks too long? Is that what you said?
I might buy a car from him soon, though. I'm looking at a Chevy Traverse.
You know what, Nick? Be careful. Be careful. I know you don't drive, but somebody who drives you around may need a new car in the near future, and you might want to go easy on him.
He just said he might buy one.
That's right.
I might. I'm in the market for a car. My question to you, Scott, is, so I'm black and, you know, whatever. Hey, Frank, were you talking about Candace Owens earlier?
Yes. I was.
Okay, now, I'll call you back on another day about that. She's a character. Anyway.
Okay. Anyway,
Scott, I was in my office, March 16th, and the police came in my office, unannounced. Didn't announce they were. I was in the back going to the bathroom. I came up front, and they came in and said they had been looking for me. I was wanted for questioning. Long story short, they took me out of my office. They denied me my right to have my white cane with me and took me down to Clayton and booked me. And turns out they had either the wrong person or no evidence of any wrongdoing that I'd ever done. And no one ever furnished a warrant. Nobody ever said what I was being charged with. All they told me was I was wanted for questioning and booked me and held me in jail. And I was forced to be down in Clayton with criminals with no. Well, you know, I had to ask the COs for help around the jail, you know, back and forth from the phone to the cell and yada, yada, yada. I'm just curious, is there a process by which I should file a complaint with, you know, whoever, or am I just, you know, whatever?
I've never heard somebody being booked because they wanted to question them. Scott, yep. What do you think?
Well, it can be that. I would like to see exactly what this wanted for questioning warrant was, and if they have the wrong person, why it's wrong, and if they had nothing on Nick that they wanted to question him particularly about, why it was that that mistake got so far down the line. And in addition to that, why he wasn't afforded some reasonable accommodation while he was in custody. And that word needs to be used so many times, especially with what has been going on the last few weeks. The word custody means not only are you sort of in the control of those law enforcement officials or the government, but you are supposed to be protected or given certain accommodations. That's not a country club. But when you are a pretrial detainee, and that's for most people that are in county jails, they are presumed to be innocent. And under the Fifth Amendment, you're not supposed to, you know, it's not supposed to be, I don't know, Tantera. But if this man has a sight impairment and the cane can be used as a weapon, I understand that. But if his disability here, and you know, we joke around and Nick's a good sport about it, but if his disability is could be dangerous and they don't give him a reasonable accommodation, I think it's time to make some kind of a complaint. Now, the question is, how do you do that? And I would say, send me an email. I know exactly how to do that. You start with going to the head of the jail in St. Louis County, and they've had about four of these people in the last couple of years. I think finally they're going to get somebody that knows what they're doing. Maybe this one is the one. But you're not alone. And for the audience, and I want to be careful on this, don't ever take what I say as a criticism of the work of law enforcement or of the 90-plus percent fantastic law enforcement officers that work this dangerous job. But when the system screws somebody or makes it less than it's supposed to be by law, not just because they're not being nice, but when they're not doing the job of the Constitution, they're hurting the system and they're hurting the great work and the nobility of that profession. So I don't see that what happened to Nick rises to the level of what's called a 1983 civil rights action, but it's not great. And if they want to get this right during this difficult period, they're going to want to pick the low-hanging fruit. Here's a hardworking, honest, for the what we know about him and what he's told about him, you know, law-abiding guy who, because of some mistake, and
or misinformation, somebody could have had it in for Nick and said, "Hey, I got a tip for you. This guy's a very dangerous." So they had to be very cautious until they knew differently.
Exactly. And Nick, understand this: they're wanted for questioning stuff is based on human information. So it's not necessarily an error in the system or some kind of police mistake. They're following orders. If the information's bad going in and it comes out bad, you could understand, as I could, that there's a mistake in identity or someone lied about you, a competitor, or someone doesn't like you. The information is bad, but it is followed properly. They can follow the proper procedure and have a bad outcome. That's not on the police. But once you're in custody and wanted for questioning, usually they'll give you get 24 hours where they really don't have to let you go. They don't have to give you a bond. But while you're in custody, those rules, those rights, the things that you are afforded as a citizen have to be followed. The cane in particular can have a dual purpose. Not only can it be used for your sight guidance, it can also be a weapon.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily belong in there. But now that you're without your sight guidance because of safety purposes, what is the measure by which they accommodate Nick so that his stay is safe? Because, you know, if you ran across some people in there that weren't so great, and not everybody is there for a traffic ticket violation.
Which I did.
You're at risk. And I have clients now that have been brutalized by other, I don't call them inmates till they're convicted, pretrial detainees, guests in the jail. I've also had clients that have been almost killed by other inmates in the prison. And they could see. So it's a huge safety issue and could be and I don't want to go too far into this, but it could be an Americans with Disability Act violation. I don't want to dump on the entire system or the St. Louis County Jail, but people have died in that jail. People have been beaten in that jail. Things have happened in that jail that shouldn't happen. And I think one of those things is that Nick, even if that hold was lawful, and it sounds like it was, that you were in danger and there should be a better proceeding. So, to answer your question, I would complain to the commandant or whatever they call it, the director of this jail, and if you want some guidance on it, send me an email, and I'll run it through my civil rights people. But you can lawfully be detained for a mistake or for bad information, and that's not bad. That's not bad police work. That's actually good police work, as long as the officers are following the rules and are taking care of you when you're in custody.
We got to move along, but Nick, I'm curious. What was it you were supposed to have done? What is it they thought you might have done?
I didn't learn this until I got the clerk at the jail told me that I was suspected of first degree burglary.
Yeah. Kind of tough to do when you're blind, isn't it? Be a burglar. That's a little hard to do.
Well, you know, I'll call you next week, but most police are great. You know, most police.
We all agree with that, and we also all agree that, like anything else, there's some scumbag police out there.
And I've been the victim of a few times. Like I got accused when I was 16 of stealing a car from across the street from my mom's house. Okay. And I told him I was blind. Like, I'm blind. What are you talking about? And, you know, I got my face smashed to the hood of a car, but I don't hate cops because of it. You know, I know most cops are good. And, you know, me and my kids are walking down the street in my neighborhood with a big old box that I had bought a massage table with, and someone called the cops on us. And the cop rolls up, and he knows my kids. My kids are cool. My kids are in the neighborhood, and the cop rolls up and was like, hey, I just want you guys to know, someone called the cops on you because you're carrying a big old box. They didn't know whether you were carrying a dead body or not. I was like, are you kidding me?
And Nick, you don't have to be the victim of police brutality to be the victim of Karenism.
We got to move. Nick, do you need Scott's address, or do you have his email address?
No, I got it. I talked to Scott before. It's actually in my email. LawOfficeScottSherman@gmail.com.
Did you say office or offices?
Law office.
That's it. You got it. All right, Nick, always a pleasure.
All right, have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. And now Sally, who's been waiting for 31 minutes. That's called patience. Sally, welcome to 590 The Fan. Thank you for waiting. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hello, Scott Sherman, AM and the PM.
Thank you, Sally.
Hi, Sally.
I called yesterday, and you told me to call back today.
That's right. I remember you. And as briefly as you can, because Scott didn't hear it, but the listeners who did, I don't want the long version of it again. But give us in as concise in a manner. Tell Scott what the issue is here.
I have rental property. Renter gave me a check the beginning of April, made out to me from a friend. She said her friend's paying her rent, post-dated April the 27th. I took the check to the bank it was drawn on and cashed it. They took all my information, cashed the check. I was surprised. Then I got a phone call from the police department where the check was cashed, saying it was forged. And so I contacted the police department where she issued the check because I wanted to press charges as well. That police department said, I need some type of proof from the bank showing this was fraudulent, and I come down and press charges. When I went to the bank, all they would give me was a copy of the check. And I mean, it's just like a regular check that's been cashed, nothing else. When I went to the Alton Police Department, I told them what happened, and I said, I was going to give the bank the money back, but when they wouldn't give me any proof, I held off on that. And he laughed at me, and he said, you don't give them that money back. That's what they have insurance for. You didn't do anything wrong. Your tenant's the one that did something wrong.
All right. Now, Scott.
She wants to know if she has to give the money back.
Yeah, well, two things. Yeah, she wants to know if she has to give the money back. But the part of this that I don't get is when she went to the bank, that the name of the bank was on this check. It was an actual account, even though it had been forged. There was a woman with that account. They cashed it in cash and then claim I don't know what, because the money obviously was in the account. Scott, does she have to give the money back?
She should tender the money back to the prosecutor's office in the county where this seems to have happened, which probably Madison County. And I'll tell you why. One, all forgeries are felonies. And so when you present a draft or check at the bank, they have signature cards somewhere. I mean, I don't know if they're in the vault or in the drawer. They don't check them all. They presume that that signature that's on that draft is actually either the signature of the person whose account it is or an authorized signer of that person, you know, through a POA or something like that. So when the forgery was committed and then Sally presented the check, nothing looked weird, so the bank gave her the money. Great. Except you cannot lawfully have something that was illegally or stolen from either from the owner, including the money that belongs to not only that person on the account, but the bank of which she went to.
There are two victims here. Sally's the victim, but the other victim is the woman whose actual account.
Yes,
they took that money out of.
That's right. Even though that's Sally's tenant, so she's a victim. Sally's a victim. The bank is a victim. The clearinghouse where the checks go through is a victim. Everybody here is a victim, including the FDIC, which that officer is right. They
except
have insurance
the renter. The renter is not a victim. The renter's
The renter is a victim. Wasn't it the renter's account that
no.
the check?
No.
A friend.
Let's put it this way.
Everybody but the forger is a victim.
Limey is renting from me.
Yeah.
Okay. He's the renter. He comes to me and says, Scott Sherman is paying my rent for me. And I see a check and your name is on it and it's your bank. The problem is, you didn't sign that check.
Limey signed my name.
So now you are out $1,000 because Limey
is a forger.
So,
and here's what, Sally, you should do. You should get, I don't know if you have the cash or not, I'm like, you know, whatever. You should tender back to the prosecutor's office in Madison County the money, offer it back to them and say, here's the money that came out of that account. For the victim of that, restitution or for the bank. I, Sally, want to prosecute this forger, and as part of their sentence, I want restitution. So I want you, prosecutor's office, to collect that for me. And this is one of the few times where you can actually get all of your money back, if it's possible, for free without getting a lawyer. That's on bad checks. Because the prosecutor's offices in the counties where these checks are either forged or whether they're forged or whether bad checks are written, they have authority to make a restitution as part of whatever plea they're doing. So they're like the free collection agency at 100%. It's great until you find out that the forger is broke and you never get anything. But they're probably going to throw this person in the slam unless they make a nice deal, because all forgeries, even for a penny, they wrote the check for a penny. It is a felony. If they write a bad check for less than $500, it's a misdemeanor. But forging somebody's name, either an endorsement or on the check or any forgery, is always a felony regardless of the value of the document.
Can I ask you a question, Scott?
Yeah.
She said yesterday this check was for $1,000.
Yeah.
Brass tacks, bottom line. Is she legally required to return that money right now? Because nothing's been proven yet.
I think she's not somebody after the fact that is an accomplice, but she could get sued from 10 years from now because good title never passes with a fraud. So could you be in prison for it? No, but you could end up having to pay this back. I think get up front. And when I say tender, I don't mean, here, prosecutor, I'm getting out of here. Offer it to them.
This is more ethical than legal. She knows,
well, no, it's
she
legal
knows
too.
But
it's
she knows it's not really her money, and she knows this other poor person has got $1,000 missing from their account.
Well,
it's their money.
It's civil, too, in that the title to the money doesn't really belong to her. And I know I'm mixing title, but there is title and ownership in something. Sally doesn't really own that money. It's not really hers.
Right.
So it's not criminal. But she, under the law, not just ethics and morals, but under the law, if she said, I don't care about your ethics and morals. I could give a you-know-what, and, you know, I'm keeping the money.
What is you-know-what? I could give a, what is that? You-know-what?
A heck.
Okay, I could give a heck. That's a good one, yeah.
I could give a heck about this, and you could have a problem later. I think at this point, if you are, and you are, the victim of a crime, I would talk to the prosecutor's office. If you got the cash, tender it and say, this belongs to, you know, state versus whoever this renter of yours is. I'll fully cooperate. But when the time comes for the hammer to come down, I want this $1,000 out of the hide of this defendant. And
now,
I think
you
get it.
When you say talk to the prosecutor.
Yeah, they have a division. See, a lot of times, you know, if you call up the prosecutor, it's like, you know, Bill Mudge or something over in, you know, St. Clair, Madison County. You can't call that guy. But you would talk to their bad check division or their property crimes division. They're much more sort of amenable and available to talk about this kind of stuff. And say, look, you know, I'm in a tough spot here. I'm involved in this because I'm the victim of this. I've got the money. It doesn't really belong to me. It really belongs to the account holder. I don't want to be in the middle, but I want this money. And see what they say. And if they say, keep the money, keep the money. But, you know.
On the other hand, should I wait to hear from the prosecutor?
No, I wouldn't. Now, I would call them. I'd be proactive, and I would call them and say, I want to talk to somebody in the bad check / property crimes division about something that happened with a bad check written to me by a forger.
Shouldn't she at least wait for a charge to be filed? What if no charge has been filed yet?
No, I wouldn't wait because I would get direct. Because there's a difference between a crime that has been either there's been an indictment or there's been an information filed and a bad check kind of thing. Because bad checks, they don't have case files. They just help you get the money. I think she should get ahead of this so that when and if the time comes, nobody can ever say, well, Sally was in on it. You know, here's a great defense. Really? Well, Sally's the mastermind. She's the one that told me to forge the check.
Think about it this way. Tim owes me $1,000.
Yeah.
I find out that he paid me, but he went and robbed a convenience store to get it. I'm not keeping that money. I wanted to go back to the convenience store. I didn't rob him.
And
I haven't committed a crime,
it,
but it's still not my money.
And because he stole it, he can't pass the title or the ownership of that to you.
Right.
Now, if Tim runs some kind of a scam where he kind of cons people around and you're not exactly quite sure how he got that money, but he pays you, that's different.
Yeah, I'm not worrying about that.
When you go to, you know, look, Schnucks gets a lot of good publicity. They deserve it. But when you go to Schnucks, they don't ask you where you get the money. They just tell you how much the groceries are.
Right.
But this is different because Sally is involved in the transaction that deprived that other person for a multitude of reasons. Sally, call them. They might tell you to keep it. That'd be great. If not, maybe they'll collect it for you and you get it all back later.
Okay.
All right.
Bye, Sally.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. What'd you do with the dog? Did you do anything about the dog?
The dog catcher was her friend. So, yeah, that just caused me more issues.
Oh, Frank, I just thought of something fun, too.
All right, thank you, Sally.
At the end of this whole thing with Sally, if she doesn't get the $1,000 back, she could still sue this person for like $1 million and get a default judgment and then hope at some point that they either get some money or win the lottery, and then you got a judgment for $1 million.
There you go. We have two lines open. It's good news. They shouldn't be, and they won't be if you'll jump on them right now. 855-282-8255 or 314-821-0590. Amy, thank you for waiting. Welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Scott Sherman. Hi, gang.
Hello, Amy.
Hi, Amy.
Hey. AM in the PM.
Thank you.
All right, so I'm a nurse. I work full-time at a hospital. It's very labor-intensive, but I also work PRN at a correctional facility. Well, I'm having a surgery coming up, and I'm going to be taking FMLA and receiving short-term disability at my full-time job. My question is, if I pick up a couple shifts at my PRN job, will I be in some kind of violation of FMLA, or will I be considered fraud because I'm going to be receiving that short-term disability?
Ooh, Scott, take this one. It's out of my league to even guess at this. Okay. I don't know.
You're taking the FMLA leave from your nursing duties, correct?
Yes, but just the full-time job because it falls under, you know, the duties. I cannot perform the duties after my surgery.
We don't say duty on this show, okay, Amy?
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
But it's so you're taking the leave from the main job, not from the side gig at the correctional, at the jail.
Correct.
Okay. Do you qualify, and I think you do, under the FMLA to take the FMLA?
For the full-time, yes, but for PRN, I'm still able to perform the duties at the PRN job.
Okay. Are you okay, Amy?
So I think you're cleared to do that as long as you're eligible under FMLA, regardless of this sort of insurance policy you have for short-term disability, and I'll tell you why. There's a thing called the collateral source rule. Which
I was
going
to mention that.
The collateral source rule has been around since the 1850s here. And what it means is it doesn't really matter what your side sort of, helper in payments are. Health insurance, car insurance. They use this all the time. Discount cards and a rich uncle. So if you have a health insurance plan that's a short-term disability, it would be, in my view, a collateral source to you claiming the FMLA. And an FMLA, normally it's just a job. It's a job holding placement law. It's a federal law that doesn't say you get paid. It says you can't get. They can't get rid of you. And it's for people that, you know, have a sick relative or they go on maternity leave or there's some disability or some kind of disease they have, where if they leave the job for treatment or to take care of a person, they can't get fired for leaving. Hey, my uncle has cancer. Oh, my God, that's so sad. I have to take care of him. Okay. 2 days later, you're fired. You know, that's FMLA to protect. It's a placeholder. So my understanding of FMLA is you don't get paid for that. They don't have paid FMLA. So it wouldn't run afoul of the FMLA law to have a collateral source. And even if they did, then I don't think having a collateral source is a problem. Now, I know there's always a H word in life. Here's what I would like you to do, because I have an FMLA expert who's not me. And if you send me an email, I will give you his name, and tomorrow you call him, and he will know. And if I'm wrong, great. I think I'm right, but I don't want to take that risk with your career.
Okay, so the bottom line is, if the insurance company that's, you know, supplementing that short-term disability catches wind of me working, they're not going to file anything, and they're not going to ask for that money back.
Well, again, now we're dealing with contract stuff. You know, if you're on disability and that and you qualify under that definition, yeah. If they have a provision in the agreement that says you can't work, then you lose. But for people that are on disability for other things, there it doesn't say you can't work. It just says that there's a certain amount of hours up to which you can't work after that. So, you know, for you, I think this is, you know, investigatory. I think you're being careful. I don't think you're going to have a problem, but I haven't read the agreement. So I don't want to hedge too much, but send me an email. I'll send you to my guy. Get a copy of those the agreements ready. But as a general rule, I would say it would be okay, as long as you don't violate the terms of that agreement, to be on FMLA and take this supplemental disability money and do a little work and claim off of that insurance policy. You can do it all if it's allowed.
Amy, do you have Scott's email address?
I do. Law Office of Scott Sherman at gmail.com.
That is absolutely correct. Let me real quickly ask you a question. You're a nurse. Do you give sponge baths?
No, but I do a lot of Foleys.
A lot of what?
Catheter insertion.
Foley catheters.
Oh, I'm not interested in that. Oh. No, thank you. I'll pass on that.
You have Frank's email?
Yeah. no, thank you. Sponge bath, sure, but...
She doesn't work for SSM, she works for S&M.
Oh, boy. That's not even rimshot worthy, man.
So, Amy, did you hear my very hilarious line that I used yesterday about nurses and sponge baths? Did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
You did?
I did.
No, I don't get to repeat it again today. I'm sorry.
See, lie and tell him no so we can say it again.
Yeah. Lie and tell me you didn't hear it, Amy. Just say you didn't hear.
Actually, yeah, I was at work, so can you maybe tell me again?
Yeah. Hey, you know what university turns out the greatest sponge bath nurses from their nursing school? Wash U.
Still funny today. Still funny.
Amy, good luck to you, and thank you for being a nurse. I love nurses. I do.
Thank you. All right. Thanks, guys. I love you, and in a sexual way.
Oh,
there you go.
We still got it. We still got it.
Do you have my email?
So, two lines open, 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. Paul, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hello, Scott.
Hi, Paul.
AM and the PM first.
That's important. Thank you.
I want to know if I have a possible medical malpractice, whatever case. I had a heart attack in 2017, and I had a four-way open heart bypass surgery, and they took a vein out of my knee, on the side of my knee, and it worked its way out 2.5 years later. It was coming out, it's like a little BB sticking out of my leg, and I complained about it for like 2 years, and they always said, oh, you just want pain medicine. I go, no, my knee is bothering me, something's sticking me. And I went and I called my surgeon's office, and they got me in, and it took them like 5 or 6 pulls to pull it out of my leg. And it was like it's called a titanium vascular clamp, and they pulled it out. It looks like a BB with a bobby pin, and they just all kind of rolled their eyeballs and left the room. They wouldn't let me keep it for a souvenir. They wouldn't let me take a picture of it. And
hold on a minute. They can't stop. They can't stop you from taking a picture of that. I mean, they wouldn't let you take a picture.
They wouldn't even let us take a picture. My sister was with me in the room.
So are you saying they left something in that they should have removed at the time of the surgery? Is that what this is about?
Well, that's the question I have. I had a lawyer on the case. I live in Illinois. I worked in Missouri. I had it done at Barnes. And when the lawyer found out that they can leave clamps in your body and they could take clamps out of your body, he kind of just dropped me. And my question is, if it was supposed to be left in, why did it start working its way out? And secondly, if it wasn't supposed to be left in, why did it work its way out?
Yeah, either way, it shouldn't have popped out like that.
And it was real painful. And, I was just like, what the heck? I tried to get it out a couple of times, and everybody in my family told me, no, it might be hooked.
First of all, I have to tell you, to me, and I'm starting over to Scott, the first red flag is, oh, no, don't take a picture of that. That right there, they don't want that.
That's weird.
I'd be real curious. I'd be real curious to see what the response is if you ask Barnes for a complete copy of all of your medical records to see how they refer to that incident in your medical records.
There you go.
Yeah.
In my medical records, just tells what they did, and everything went okay. All instruments and implements were accounted for after the operation.
Yeah, and the sad thing about the picture is it's your word that they said you can't. You don't have any proof that they told you, no, you can't take a picture of that.
Yeah, well, my lawyer tried to contact them. They just kept avoiding. They act like I wasn't even at the West County office to get it removed.
Well, sure they did.
And everything. Well,
there has to be a record of your visit to have it removed. What? How is that worded? Scott, am I on the wrong track here?
No, you guys are all over it. I want to work backwards. How long ago was this procedure where they removed this BB-like object from you, Paul?
It was July 24th of 19.
Okay,
and so my surgery was in 17.
Yep, less than a year. It's a 2-year statute. The clock burns on this.
Over 2 years.
And the reason it's a 2-year statute that runs, I think, from the time the BB's removed is, most medical malpractice cases they start running at the time that the mistake is made, and there is sort of a discovery rule that is an exception to that where it's 2 years from the time that the thing that the foreign object that's left in is discovered. You can have something in you, like a sponge right. or something, for like 5 years, and then, you know, then, it's too late. Well, it's not too late, but boy, it's getting close. Do you have all your medical records other than these West County records for the removal of this object?
Yes.
Okay.
The lawyer that I had.
Don't tell me who it was. Case. Just what city were they in? The office.
In Belleville.
Okay.
Illinois. Okay. Good.
So and here's what I would say.
When they found out about the limited statute, you know, how long is 2 years? And
yeah.
Then
I would hope that they would have known.
Hold on. You guys are talking at the same time. Go ahead, Paul. When they found out what?
When they found out it was past the 2 year statute of limitations, they kind of honked at that, and then when they found out that they can actually leave a clamp in your body or take it out after the surgery, he just kind of balked and dropped me. And I just want to know if I should pursue this more. I got another lawyer that I'm contacting, and he's wanting to know more information about this.
So I would say absolutely contact that lawyer if they're interested.
Get
the medical records to that person. You have at best about 13 months to get this on file, which means someone's going to have to review it. You're going to have an expert opinion attached to it, and things going to have to be filed. The statute of limitations are unforgiving, and whatever people's opinions about them are, it's the way it is. It's in stone. So I wouldn't sit on it any longer. But if you get to about the 6 month point, no one wants it, no matter how great it is. I don't want to give you an opinion about it because I don't know the facts. But I can tell you that if you have another lawyer that's interested and you want to contact them, not only should you give them those records, but you should make a request yourself, because those medical records belong to you. You might have to pay some money to get them. They're not the hospital. I get those West County records.
So you know, just like they had no right to tell you you couldn't take a picture, if they try to pull that, well, we can't send you, those are our records, then you're going to get a lawyer for that too, because that's not true.
And I'd file a complaint with the Board of Healing Arts. So send the letter, send it in a manner like overnight mail or, you know, Priority Express, where you've got a tracking number to the health information department, to the right department at the right place, and demand your records. And then they say it's $45. Welcome to my world. I buy a lot of lunches, $30, $50, $80 at a time, for the purpose of paying for records. I don't buy them lunch, but I have to pay for a lot of records. You also need to get those records, because without a review of that, no lawyer in medical malpractice is going to take that. Those cases are very expensive to prosecute, and they're very difficult to win, no matter where they are.
Yeah, that's
even
what they told me.
Even in the city of St. Louis, where if you were at Barnes on Kings Highway, that's where the case would be. So good luck, but get on it. And the only reason the statute has not run is because it's a discovery foreign object case and not an actual medical negligence or sort of less than the standard of care case. Otherwise, this thing's too late.
The other thing, when they pulled it out, it hurt like hell, but afterward I was feeling better a couple weeks later, and I've done more than I done in a long time since. It caused me to lose my job, basically. I could, my knee hurt if I walked, if I went up steps, if I squat down. When they pulled it out, I went and had an x-ray done on it 3 weeks ago, and it shows pieces left inside my leg. Like 4 pieces, like the other end of the clamp. And the surgeon, my sister called them, and they said they don't think that's what it is. And I
well, what
know
the heck else
I
could it be?
What
else would it be?
Yeah.
No, that's
yeah,
well,
terrible. They said my bones look good on my knee, and I'm like, I told you it was like right under the incision where they took the vein out. So
we are out of time. I mean, completely out of time. Paul, if you need it, do you have Scott's email address?
I sure do. Scott Sherman.
Nope, you don't.
Law office of scottsherman.com.
No. Still don't have it. Scott, give it to him.
lawofficeofscottsherman@gmail.com.
There you go. Good luck, Paul.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Well, another fast hour. Thank you, Scott. We'll do it again next Thursday. Ladies and gentlemen, attorney at law, Scott Sherman.
Thank you.
Co-host of the Yard Sale, which you can hear this Saturday morning, 7 to 9 o'clock, along with his other host, Dan Strauss. That's brought to you by First Community Credit Union, as it has been for years. Ooh, Playhouse Hour. Here we go. 5 o'clock, 590 The Fan.
Covering St. Louis.
I cannot recommend it highly enough.
590 The Fan. More than just sports. KFNS Wood River, St. Louis.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. Reverend Al Sharpton is calling for all Americans to come together for a march in D.C. in August. The demonstration on August 28th will honor the 57th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's Civil Rights March while also advocating for justice reform. At George Floyd's memorial service in Minneapolis today, Sharpton spoke about being hopeful that the death of Floyd will lead to more accountability and change in the criminal justice system.
We're going to make America great